Good. So our index patient was on an international flight coming from Western Europe, arrived in Portland on the 12th of October, and began having symptoms roughly 10 days later and developed a rash last week on Friday. And her infectious period was between the 21st of October and the 29th. And as many of you know, I think you've probably seen the restaurants that were frequented in the timelines. We put those out to the media for persons who may have been at those four sites during the infectious period of the patient who visited those facilities. And that, to date, is the only confirmed case that we have in Lane County. As you probably know, there was another confirmed case on that flight. It's a Washington County resident. And we are anxiously following up with the flight and others who may have been Lane County residents on that flight. And I think the only other point I'll make about the current case is that she is doing okay. She was actually quite sick, you know, with a high fever that you get with measles. In keeping with what we have often seen with measles, I suspect there are some on the phone who have diagnosed and treated measles as I have, and it can be a pretty nasty condition. So our goal at this present time is to identify measles cases as quickly as we can, to prevent the spread of measles, and to identify groups of unimmunized children and adults. And of course, we need each of you on the call to help us with that. We're hoping that the messaging that we've sent out thus far has provided you with the adequate information of potential infectious sites and then also for testing. But measles can be a little bit of a challenge in terms of testing, and when we have multiple laboratories that do not offer all the testing we'd like to offer, it gets more complicated. So I'm going to stop there, and let's just open it up to questions. Jocelyn, how would you like to handle questions?
We don't have an easy way to handle questions, so people should just jump in. I'm sure we have a lot of people that have very similar questions.
Pat, this is Richard at University of Oregon.
Yes, sir.
If we order tests for measles, I mean, I've got your thing from the weekend. Does that all go through the state, or is that supposed to go through Quest? And what's the turnaround time?
Sure. So thank you, Richard. So we have four main laboratories that provide services to our county. So LabCorp, Quest, Legacy, and InterPath. And none of them provide PCR testing for measles. I spoke with them all the last couple of days. None of them offer it directly. However, the state lab does. The state lab, Oregon State Public Health Lab, will be providing PCR, but it has to be approved through public health. And there will be some pretty significant restrictions. It will need to be a person exposed to a confirmed case and they're symptomatic. So I think chances are fairly good that you will have a patient in front of you, or you may have a patient in front of you who doesn't meet those criteria, but you're thinking maybe they do need to be tested anyway. So in that case, your laboratory, whoever you work with, and Richard, I think that you said you work with Quest, they will be sending it off to a different reference laboratory. So there are several reference labs like ARUP Laboratories in Salt Lake City. They're one of the big ones that do this testing as a reference lab. So I just want to caution people that not every request to the state lab for PCR testing is going to be granted. It's going to have to be somebody who has exposure to a confirmed measles case and they're symptomatic for public health to want to go ahead and approve that testing. Was that helpful, Richard?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Question, if the state does it, what's the turnaround?
So once the sample gets there, the state has been authorized to do overtime. In fact, the two patients, our Lane County patient and the Washington patient, they were tested after hours. So it's a 3 to 4 hour PCR testing window once the sample gets there. And I appreciate the question, Richard, because this is always a challenge in disease outbreaks where the clinician in a clinic collects the sample, it goes down to the lab to be refrigerated or frozen or incubated, whatever the test requires. And the left hand and right hand don't always talk to each other, and it sits there for days. And usually public health is part of the solution. We have our communicable disease nurses all over it saying, get the sample up there, the courier's coming, et cetera. So it's really important, if you think that you have a measles case, to bird dog that sample and make sure it gets to your reference lab or it gets up to the state lab. Other questions? So while you're thinking, I'll talk a little bit about timeline. So this index patient got a rash on the 25th. So again, 4 days before the rash and 4 days after the rash is the infective period. And given that the majority of people have an incubation period of 10 to 12 days, from this index case, we would expect maybe the first couple cases, if we're going to get any, to occur somewhere around Halloween. So today's the 29th, you know, in a couple days, if our index patient exposed some people at those restaurants, we should start seeing them late in the week into the weekend. And since it usually takes people a couple days of being sick before they go to their doc, it probably won't be until, you know, the weekend or the first part of next week. So just a little bit of a timeline for you to start thinking about that. One other point is, because we have a little bit of time, we're really encouraging people, and I just did a radio show this morning at 6:30, trying to encourage people, hey, you got a little bit of time, call up your clinic, assess your vaccine rate, and see if you have no doses of measles or one, and if you need another vaccine. We have a bit of time to get that and get protected. So consider that as well as helping prevent a big outbreak. So any further questions?
Pat, may I ask one more question? It's Richard again.
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to assess the risk of our students maybe coming in contact. Is there anything you can share about, I mean, if you can't, I understand it, the demographics of the person, how old they are roughly, or, and then the second question, I understand, at least from what I read, is the person was partially immunized, is that correct?
So, Rich, appreciate the question. This is a, depending on how you define middle age, this is a middle-aged person, and we do not have a confirmed report from a medical chart signed by a licensed medical provider that this person had a dose of vaccine, but she gives a very good story that she did receive one dose of vaccine 10-plus years ago. So partially vaccinated, most likely, not fully vaccinated, and a middle-aged person.
Thank you.
With Peace Health. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about any contacts that you're tracking that may become cases that weren't public exposures, and do we have any high-risk cases that we might be expecting needing testing in the community?
So I believe I heard Alice Kirby's voice. Alice is the communicable disease nurse leading the contact investigations. Alice, if that was your voice, would you take that question, please?
Yeah, so this is Alice. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Very well.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thanks. So we are, there was an international flight from Amsterdam to Portland, and there was an individual on that flight who was ill, who then infected people on the plane. And so we now have word of there were other people on that plane who lived in Lane County. So we're going to start contacting them this morning. To get in touch and do symptom checking and so on and so forth. And then for our case, then we have been working closely with the case to notify people that they were in contact with as well. And so far, so good, knock on wood. You know, we don't have anything else, but it's still early. Does that answer your question?
Partially. I'm wondering, are there known high-risk contacts that we should be preparing to test if they come down ill?
And by known high risk, help me out with a little bit more about what you're looking for.
Are there contacts that are non-susceptible that you're aware of?
Not that I am aware of at this time.
Thank you, Alice. So while you are thinking, I'll mention the laboratory testing document that will be coming out this morning. In a perfect world, especially early in a potential measles outbreak, we would collect both PCR and a serology test. And the biggest reason, of course, is there are false negatives and false positives with any test. And measles is so important and so communicable, we really want to have two tests to begin with. We would prefer that you collect a nasopharyngeal swab. If you need to do a throat swab, that's acceptable as well, but nasopharyngeal is preferred. You can also do PCR on urine. But the key point is to get a PCR test and a serology test. And some of you may not have NP swabs. Now would be a time to make sure that your clinic is stocked with the appropriate swabs for PCR. I'm often surprised that some facilities, even in this time of PCR and molecular testing, do not have the adequate swabs for PCR. As you know, there are natural inhibitors in anything that used to be alive that inhibits the PCR test. So you can't use swabs with a wooden stick because wood used to be alive and has inhibitors of the PCR reaction. You can't use cotton pit swabs because cotton used to be alive and it also will stop the PCR reaction. So you have to use these synthetic steel and Dacron polyester type of swabs. So now would be the time to make sure your clinic is stocked with the appropriate samples that allow you to do PCR testing. And also the viral transport media, or VTM, that allows the virus to stay alive on those swabs. Fairly often when we have a large outbreak, like the whooping cough outbreak last year too, we not only realize people in the community don't know how to collect an NP swab, and we did some training on that for community clinics, but they don't have the samples. So take a look at that, please, and make sure you have the appropriate samples for PCR. Another item is, especially for healthcare persons, we really want to make sure that healthcare staff, healthcare workers are protected. So if you can work with your employee health nurses, if you have one, or work with your individual tracking system to make sure that your staff are fully vaccinated and protected, that will not only protect your practice, but protect your staff and their patients as well. Other questions?
Pat, this is Catherine Kroll again. Can you talk to us about what contact tracing will look like if we have a case in our facilities? I believe I understood from our exchange yesterday that we will follow our employees and that you won't be asking for any demographic or information on that. But what about patients and visitors who might be exposed? Will you be following those, or will you be expecting the facility to follow those?
So thanks for the question, Catherine. Catherine's with the Peace Health System, and we've worked with Peace Health, as you might imagine, a great deal. And they prefer to have their employee health personnel track all of their staff. Regarding others exposed, we will certainly be helpful and we'll want to meet you halfway or in the middle. We have had some collaborative outbreaks in the past with several of the facilities, I think, represented on this call, whether it was tuberculosis or whooping cough. And it's a little different between each facility based upon their abilities. Smaller facilities oftentimes don't have an employee health clinic, an employee health nurse that can help tracking. So oftentimes we do a little bit more. So I would say we would meet in the middle, but I'm going to pitch this over to Alice as well. Alice, would you like to add anything to that response?
Hi, so I am here. In terms of contact tracing, we would work with your facility to understand who is in your office at that time and get a list of names, because what we really want to educate people about is do they have their vaccine status, and then what symptoms do they need to watch out for.
So you'll be doing those calls, Alice?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Other questions? While you're thinking, I'll put a few more points out there about lab testing. You know, I cannot say enough that the IgM serology test is readily available from all four of the labs that service Lane County, LabCorp, Quest, Legacy, and Enterpath. It's a very good test if it's collected 72 hours or more after the rash starts. It's almost diagnostic for measles. So occasionally someone will present to your clinic and you will maybe think they have measles, but it's only been a day or two since their rash. You'll get an IgM test and it'll be negative, but you really think they have measles. Our recommendation is wait until the full 3 days after the rash started and then repeat that test. And it will, if it is measles, it will almost certainly be positive. So, you know, in this fancy world of molecular testing, many of us look at it as the new bright, shiny object, and it gets our attention that PCR is, you know, so much better than this old world serology type of testing. But IgM testing is very, very good in measles, especially if you get it 3 days or more after the rash. So please don't overlook that test. If all you can get is IgM, you can only get a blood draw, and you're trying your darndest to get a swab in somebody's nose, like a little kid, and you can't do it, send the IgM what you have, and it could potentially be diagnostic. So don't overlook that. Regarding the PCR, it too has limitations. You know, there are false negatives. You don't get it back into the posterior pharynx. You don't get it back far enough and capture the bug, or it's you take the test too early or too late. It too has limitations, but it's really good from the onset of the rash until about 3 days after the rash. After that time, viral loads back in the nasopharynx and the throat start to drop, so you're less likely to capture it. So, again, think about the timing, and that will be on the measles testing algorithm that we send out later this morning. Other questions?
Hey, Pat, this is Bob Pels. I'm ID doc, for those who don't know me. Do you know what the turnaround time would be for the PCR once it's available?
So PCR for the state lab, once the sample is at the state lab, they tell us 3 to 4 hours. And that's exactly what happened on this test for our index patient in Lane County. The sample, Alice probably knows the exact time, but it arrived there late afternoon. They stayed after hours, and they got it done in about 3 hours. But the key point, again, is to make sure the sample gets up to the state lab. And I can't stress enough how often we hear that, oh, yeah, the sample was sent, and it's sitting in a refrigerator at one of the clinics or the hospital or the urgent care, and it never got sent because somebody didn't close that loop. So public health tries really hard to continue to nudge practices. Did you send the sample? Did you send the sample? But we also need the help of each of you on the call to make sure that if you collected a sample for measles and if you think it's real, make sure it gets to the laboratory to be tested. Thank
one
you
of the
question,
one of the
Bob.
Ways that PCR is appealing is that it has a rapid turnaround time. But I wonder if, in actuality, given you know, the difficulty of maybe contacting somebody at public health and getting the sample shipped to the right destination, if the more sensible way to get rapid turnaround testing is just to do the IgM. And as you and I spoke yesterday, patients might have to have some out-of-pocket for IgM, but they won't for the PCR, which would be another consideration, maybe.
Yeah, I would hope, again, people don't overlook the IgM. And on this measles testing protocol, again, that you'll see this morning, we talked to all four labs. And the turnaround time varies between 1 and 6 days. Some of the labs, so Quest, for example, they do it Tuesday through Saturday. They batch them and do them in batches. And typically they get about a 2-day turnaround, which is pretty quick. Of course, we would like it to be faster than that as clinicians, but that's pretty good. And so please don't overlook IgM. Depending upon the lab that you utilize, it may be the faster way forward.
And the results show up in the EMR.
Good point, yes. Other questions or comments? Well, while you're thinking, I'll give another point. So You know, the measles vaccine, it's a live vaccine, of course, and you can get protection post-exposure if you get the vaccine into patients within 72 hours. So that's another point not to overlook. If you have a patient who said, you know, I was at one of these restaurants during the time period that public health has highlighted as a risky time period, if you can get people vaccinated within 72 hours, it may provide protection, or it will, you know, decrease the severity of the clinical course. So we're thankfully at a time where the measles vaccine is readily available and not in a shortage. Occasionally, of course, we have shortages of vaccines and antibiotics and such, but now is not the time. So don't forget that early on, you could protect somebody with the vaccine as well.
The vaccine would give you a false positive sort of PCR. Is that a concern, or is that not accurate?
No, that's true. So if you did vaccinate somebody, it's a live vaccine, and if you then later tested them, it would be very hard to interpret those test results. And we kind of teased through that a bit with the outbreak, you know, up in Clark County and the Portland area late last year and the first couple months of this year. There were a variety, a couple handfuls of patients that the health officer caucus here in Oregon, we reviewed them, and it's tough. So it's a good point, Bob. If you do choose to vaccinate somebody, which I think is probably the right thing to do most of the time, if they do become infective, it's going to be hard to interpret their laboratory results after that. Other questions out there? Are we just wowing you, or is it too early in the morning?
This is Laura Green from LCC. Hi,
yes,
Pat.
Go ahead, Laura. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question about, maybe this is in the materials and I missed it, but say that you have a case and you're suspicious and you work with Lane County Public Health and you do the testing and say this person is symptomatic but stable. After they're in your office and you've collected their samples, sort of like then what for that patient?
So I
you know,
I
we just send them
Allison.
Home and are like, get, make sure we
yeah,
have
we
the
would
phone
like
number
if,
or?
If you think they're measles, we certainly would like to isolate them. So it's probably best to hear what we're doing right now through our contact precautions and contact investigation. So Alice, you want to walk through our process currently?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So what we do is we ask the person until the test results come back. We ask them to self-isolate, and people are largely very willing to do so. And then we start working with them on sort of anticipating that it may be positive. We work with them on sort of what public places were you at, and then we also talk with them about other people, individuals that they might be coming into contact with. And we treat that kind of as a suspect case and start working it up. And then as soon as the case is confirmed, then we look at things like the media stories about where people might have been exposed. We start working directly with their contacts in case anybody does need vaccines or anything like that. Laura, does that help answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, Laura, I think in primary, secondary, and in post-secondary school, like your college, you know, there's always the question about students, and they might miss a test or something, and, you know, public health won't solve that side of the equation, but I think that we all have to be thoughtful about people's lives. So that will require a little bit of flexibility amongst professors, instructors, and such to make sure that the student continues to progress in their education.
Yeah, I think people will understand, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes. In addition to your questions, it'd be interesting to hear what level of concern maybe you're hearing from staff and patients, and perhaps how you are dealing with it in your particular agency, that could be helpful to us as well. I know that some of the larger systems that have occupational health as infrastructure, they're looking at all of their staff, their immunization records, and they're doing some internal messaging to make sure that, that staff are healthy and protected. And we'd be curious what you're hearing from the community or what you're doing in your with your staff to try to keep people protected as well. If you want to share that, that'd be welcome.
Well, Pat, this is Richard. I can chime in again.
Sure, go ahead.
So we've done three things. One, we have sent a message to every student that at this point we can't confirm if they're immunized or not. This is usually our more vulnerable time because incoming freshmen, domestic, don't have to show that until the second semester. And then we're also looking if there's any holes with our international students. So they all got messages about this. We also put this up on our website, that is out in Lane County. Basically, if you are in these locations, I've actually asked, for students to be notified. And if you are not immunized, if you were in these areas, actually notify you guys. And then we've also sent a direct message to our child care centers.
Richard, thank you for that. You know, it highlights a couple state-level decisions. So your university students are required to have two measles doses. And as you said, that doesn't happen on day one. They have some time to become compliant, so to speak. There are other post-secondary schools that are not required to have that, like community colleges and Job Corps training sites. So we don't have a harmony. So if you're working in an urgent care or an ED and you see a college student, it may be that they have both doses because the college, well, the university requires it, but it may also be that they're at a training program that the state does not mandate it, like Lane Community College. So it's always best to ask. I think somebody had a comment there. Please go ahead,
Pat,
if you did.
Pat, hi, it's Angie Long, also at the University of Oregon. I just wanted to indicate that we are running at about 95% coverage of the MMR, and we're on track for that. The students we contacted yesterday represented about 6% of the student population who weren't immunized.
Or could prove.
Gosh, that's amazing. Well done. That must be quite a tracking system that you have. Thanks for keeping our community safe with that.
We have a full-time person on it.
Wow.
So at Lane Community College, as you indicated, we have sort of the opposite. We have no idea how many people have been immunized or not, because not only is it not required, but unfortunately we're not able currently to track it, so we don't know. So what we've done is we sent a message to all students and all staff, giving them information about what's going on, information encouraging everybody to get fully vaccinated if they're not, giving them information about symptoms, what to do, and linking to the Lane County Public Health website to look at the sites if they've been there or not. And we also ordered more doses of MMR, hoping that people will come in and get vaccinated.
Thank you, Laura. You know, Laura, as you know, but others on the call probably do not, we have tried to work with some of these other schools that are not required to have the two doses. We met with a couple of vice presidents at Lane Community College to talk about it. And I understand, you know, it can be a hardship. Vaccines are not always cheap, and some people it may be a challenge to, or a decision, do I pay my tuition or do I buy this textbook for the course or do I go get my vaccine? And that's a challenge. So I appreciate your efforts, Laura, in trying to keep that population protected. Any way we can help, please let us know. We'll do what we can as well to link up with you and try to foster a message of health to your students and staff and faculty.
Yeah, thank you. And we found out yesterday about the discount price for students at Lane County Public Health for MMRs, and that's amazing. So thank you.
A victory, a small victory.
This is Robin Virge, and I'm with Peace Health Medical Group. And we're gearing up based on our significant epicenter of experience during the last round, gearing up to expect a high volume of patients calling, asking about their immunization records, and requesting vaccination. We put together a plan to identify patients, masking them, evaluating them appropriately, and I was pleased to review our records for immunization and confirmed immunity, and we're at 99%. However, obviously, in healthcare, we want to make sure that anyone who's treating these individuals has a titer positive. So we're working through that. And that's for the medical system, not for hospital.
Robin, thank you for joining the call and sharing that information. You know, part of our messaging as healthcare providers and support staff, measles is so exquisitely communicable that we want to make sure our staff are healthy and also that they're protected and that they don't potentially spread this to patients. And the recommended exclusion for unprotected healthcare workers is 21 days. And, you know, we had an outbreak at a local hospital here two years back, and we had someone who I think it was chickenpox actually, who needed to be excluded for some time, and that particular employee chose not to be vaccinated and protected and was not paid for some time and was on the edge of their mortgage payment, etc., one of those worst case scenarios. So we want to make sure staff are protected, and now is the time to review that. So I'm thankful that those of you who weighed in are doing that in your agency. Much appreciated.
My only other question would be, do you anticipate holding another call later on in the week after we hit kind of the window of time? I think there will be a lot of interest in how other organizations are dealing with what is happening within the community. I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to partner as well.
We appreciate the nudge. If there's value in this, we certainly will do it. And also, of course, if the outbreak itself changes, like new secondary cases, we would certainly do that as well. So thank you for the nudge that there might be value in holding another one of these. We can certainly move to do so. Alice, would you, anything you would like to discuss regarding contacts, investigation, and maybe the isolation quarantine that you haven't mentioned already? Alice, if you're talking, you're on mute. Jocelyn, my phone line has gone dead. Can anybody hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I don't think we have Alice any longer.
Oh, we don't. Okay. All righty. Well, sounds like we've reached the end of key questions. So thank you for joining us today. Much appreciated. I appreciate the conversation and the questions. And we will move to do this again later in the week. And if there are any significant changes in the outbreak at present, we will share them real time through the health alert messaging. And again, look for the measles testing algorithm later this morning. And thank you again for joining us, and we'll talk again soon.